I take my shirt off. Work all day, hustle and pray. Got nowhere to go. Got to catch my sugar. My plantation sugar. My plantation sugar. My plantation sugar. Ah, plantain, 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 plantain. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Shirtless Plantain Show, the Arsenal edition. This is your host, Dean, and I am here with Mitch. How are you, Mitch?
I love waking up early for a nice little 3-0 win. It's great. Good to be back.
Mitch is good. Mitch is good. Coach, how you doing?
I'm back. I'm back to the back cave, and yeah, hope everyone enjoyed the win and shit, and yeah, the instant reaction is out now, so go watch that before you listen to this. Yeah, all that.
No, watch it before and after, please. Watch
that. That'll be really helpful, actually. Yeah, and like and subscribe and share on all the good stuff.
Yeah, yeah. We always forget to say that, but we mean that. So do that. Thank you about that. Anyway, we're here to talk Arsenal 3, Nottingham Forest 0. Lineup, same as the last game, except this time, Ebrechese started. Mm-hmm. And Mikel Merino started over Declan Rice. Mitch, I feel like you were more on my side on the Merino, the big Merino debate last week. So I'll give you all the fun questions. Fuck coach. I'm just mad that he was at the game and I wasn't at the game. I feel like this was a game I probably could have gone to this year. But you know what? It's not about me. It's not about me. It's just my podcast. Sorry, people. I'm emotional. What can I say? Anyway. the Merino pick over Rice, it makes sense, right? We paid attention to what he did during the international break, and Declan Rice played a lot of minutes. But so did Merino. So it had me wondering, did it make sense? Were you surprised by it or not?
One of my favorite things about games at this time means that I woke up, my alarm went off at 5:30 when the ball was being kicked off. So I rolled over, turned it on my phone, and then was just doing puzzles in my head of like, okay, I think that's Declan Rice over at the 8. Wait, no, fuck, that's Merino. and so just trying to figure out the lineup as the game is being played is a very fun game that I get to play on these 5:30 games. And I think the Merino pick does make sense just based off, you know, how well he played. A guy scores 4 goals in 2 games. It's hard to not start him, even if it's not for your team. And then also, we have our first Champions League game this week. And why not give Declan Rice a little bit of a rest before going to Bilbao? I like that we have like this many players that we can just like throw out all of these different looks and like have a real variety for like how we want to set up every game, just based on how players are rested, how players are playing, how the other team is set up. We just have so many different permutations of a lineup, which makes it so you shouldn't have any Arsenal players in FPL at all.
Speak for yourself.
Well, that
ain't great today. That ain't great. but coach, you were actually at the game. Typically, we talk about the lineup before the match starts because somebody posts in the chat, then we get into it. But we didn't talk today, so I don't know what you thought about the lineup. What did you think? Do you agree with Mitch?
Yeah, I was, from a periodization point of view, I was pleased that Rice didn't start, to be honest. I was like, this is good. This is, you know, our manager is a learner as well as a teacher. He's a learner as well, so that's good. And also, I suppose, nothing else really surprised me because we're not down to the bare bones, thankfully, but, you know, we're slowly but surely kind of running out of bodies this early into the season. So I feel like the rest of the team kind of picked itself. So, yeah.
Eze on the left. Let's just get into it because I feel as if we're going to devote more time to some other players today. But what do you make of his first performance? Coach, I'll let you go first on this one. If you're grading it out of 10, what would you grade it? And what did you like? What did you not like?
I'm grading it a 7.5 out of 10, which is good. There's nothing wrong with that. And his first touch of the ball, or his first time he got the ball, he immediately tried to beat a player. And I think he did, in fact. He faked him out kind of thing. And I feel like everything is intentional. Everything is, you can look for signs and everything, you know. I don't know, Dean, what's like one of your favorite rap albums? Anything.
The Great Escape by Larry June and The Alchemist.
Okay, first track on that. You knew what you was getting into, right? Straight away, pretty much. Right,
I did.
Exactly.
I did. Yeah.
And
he told me.
That's essentially what Eze's showing us. He's like, oh, okay, this is what it's going to be when I'm here, basically. He was like, just sit back and relax. And that was it. You know, he got the ball with a calming presence. He was always his whole game is combination play. That's the moment he got the ball, he's always looking, okay, what's the next move? Who am I bouncing the ball up so I can make something else happen, kind of thing. And that's like, there was no sort of, don't get me wrong, there's still going to be teething problems, and there was some today that I noticed, but immediately he's trying to build a relationship. That's the most important thing. The moment you start building relationships, the more the automatisms come, the more all of these sort of things just happen. And it seems off the cuff because, you know, it looks that way, but it's a lot of work that goes behind it as well. So overall, I just feel as if I'm really pleased with the fact that he didn't even let the occasion get to him. He was just like, I'm here, I'm an Arsenal player, and I belong here, and you guys know it as well. You know, that's what really pleased me about his performance more than anything.
So, Coach Mitch, do you have a similar impression?
Yeah, I think the score that he gave him was probably accurate. I mean, like, it was a great first performance, I think. I think I would have liked to see him on the ball more, even with Eze in the team. I think we were still a little bit right-side dependent. But I think part of that was because the guy on the right side was cooking very, very hard. I think what maybe would have helped Eze a little bit more is, well, I guess Calafiori is just kind of unchained at this point. I think he just kind of goes where he wants. And for a lot of this game, it wasn't down the left side. I think I would have liked to see a little bit more of like an overlap from Calafiori. I think it felt like Marino and Eze were a little bit isolated out there at times. But again, I can't really blame our right side dependence today because our right side looked fucking great.
Hey. Coach, when we did the Ange appointment live on one of our recordings last week, you expressed some dismay that Nottingham Forest were maybe going for that new coach bounce thing. And it obviously didn't work out for them today. But did you have any sort of confusion or trepidation about what approach we were going to see? Because Ange is famously very front-footed tactically, if you want to call it that. Meanwhile, he won a trophy playing in almost the exact opposite way. And Nottingham Forest are probably the furthest away from his Tottenham team. So did you have any thoughts or any confusion as to what he might do coming to the Emirates with the team he's coaching for the first time?
I'll be honest with you. I was quite impressed with the fact that this was not Nottingham Forest of last season or even the game before last. Like, it was a completely different side. Honestly, like, it really was. Don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing for Nottingham Forest because they held free again. But genuinely, I was like, oh, okay, this is, they're playing like, I noticed it was like 15 yards higher straight away. I'm like, okay. The midfield press is a lot more aggressive. Okay, even though we played around it. So I was like, okay, he's put his fingerprint on this team already. The only issue is that he came to like, you know, one of the hardest places in the world to come to. And they came up against some defenders today that were playing out of their mind as well. So David Raya was bored today because of whenever the ball did get up to those guys, the defenders were just hoovering it up. So there's not much Ange can really do when you're trying to build an attack and our defenders are just like, no. Don't do that, basically. That's what it was. So I give him some credit there for getting his fingerprint on the team, but it's just unlucky, mate, you know, just the way we are.
I also think that there's maybe not a worse manager in the league to get a new manager bounce from when it's like truly the most stuck in his ways, probably second most stuck in his ways manager in the Premier League right now. And I don't know if you could give him 4 days and expect a new manager bounce because he's so like set in the way he wants to play soccer.
Yeah, but he still won a trophy not doing that. We don't mention it enough. It was deep blocks against random Scandinavian teams, but they won a trophy. Yay! All right. But yeah, I largely agree with both of you. I was actually impressed by the approach that he changed some things, but he didn't change anything too drastically. I think with time, this can work. Like, you know, where it's not, oh, we're doing all this full-on Ange thing, or we're doing full-on Nuno impression. Like, just moving them up the pitch a bit, trying to dominate the ball a little more, in addition to what they're already doing, I'm not mad at that. I'm not mad at that. But we'll see what he does. I think he's a good coach. I'm a Ange guy. Yeah, I'm an Ange guy. One of the reasons why Ange was really unsuccessful today, unfortunately for him, was because Arsenal apparently can just spawn generational defenders. Because this Christian Mosquera kid, when the lineup came out, I was expecting him to be there because I knew that he was Saliba's replacement, you know, despite the news about Saliba training yesterday. But I thought to myself, Chris Wood is one of the top gunsmen in the league right now. And it's probably going to be a problem for this kid to face an elite striker on that level. And Mitch, I don't think it was a problem for him at all.
Was Chris Wood playing today? I didn't. He's a big guy. I feel like he'd be hard to miss. But so is this lanky motherfucker, Christian Mosquera. it is. I kind of thought the transfer fee was kind of insane at the time. I hadn't watched him, but like a 21-year-old defender of like, he's got a clip of him like kicking Vinicius's ass, and I feel like that alone should raise his price 20 million. And the fact that we got him for 13 is actually fucking insane. And it's cool to just have a Saliba regen as our backup for Saliba. That's great. I love that. I hope that he can continue his development when he's not playing as much, because I mean, it's amazing that he's able to come in at this age and just like look not out of his depth. I think we were talking about a couple weeks ago, he came in at the beginning of the game at Anfield, not an easy place, and did not look out of his depth. And in this, looked even more impressive against a team that's not even as good as them. I Chris Wood was absent. I think Coach put it in a really nice way of that our defenders were hoovering up every single ball where it just didn't even get to Raya. And I think it was just like truly magnetic for him and Gabriel. And I think he's going to get a lot of plaudits because he's the new player. But Gabriel was also fucking excellent today. There was a play early on in the game where he like just flicks it over. I think it's Wood. Yeah. And you guys remember when Gabriel was bad on the ball? Like, there was a real time where he was not a very good on-the-ball center back. And now he is, like, confidently leading our back line with his abilities on the ball. And I truly just don't think there's enough plaudits that go his way for, like, how he's developed as a player for the last, like, 4 years that he's been at Arsenal. And just, it goes under the radar. He's just so impressive. And it probably doesn't hurt Mosquera to have a guy like him playing next to him.
Coach. Mitch mentioned that essentially we've spawned another Saliba regen. I wanted you to sort of rack your overly rigid brain to tell us what you think the differences are between these two players. Like, what are the differences between Saliba and Mosquera? Because they're not exactly the same, but they're very similar. They're similarly competent, that's for sure. But from an attribute standpoint, there are some differences.
Yeah, straight away, I think Mosquera is way more of a runner than Saliba. Saliba's reading of the game is so good that he really has to like break into a sprint to make recovery tackles. Not that he's not capable, because he's lightning, but I think Mosquera leans into the fact that he's, you know, yeah, I'm going to be front-footed here, and if I get beaten, I can just recover anyway. So whereas Saliba will just rather just read the game, because, you know, these are all peons to him. You know, they're beneath him. Like, you're not going to make me run. How dare you? Sort of thing. But that's the main difference for me. I think Mosquera is just more aggressive. He's more aggressive in his game, in his defending. I think his actual technical ability is probably a little bit underrated, but it's because he doesn't look comfortable. That's the issue. I think it's an aesthetic thing. Funny enough, whereas yeah. Saliba,
he has high shoulders. Nervous.
Whereas Saliba looks better than most midfielders on the ball. So again, there's that. But I think interesting point today. I know we were talking about Gabriel, you know, being really good on the ball. But to my estimations, I'm probably gonna need it on my rewatch. But Mosquera was our primary distributor. Like, I'm pretty damn sure he was. That is really encouraging, like really, really encouraging that he's the one straight away, one game in, his first start. They're like, okay, let's give him the ball. he'll get us up the pitch. That is wonderful. And it's not because Gabriel is not capable. Gabriel is wonderfully capable. It's just nice that there was still some synergy there despite all the injuries that we have. It's good to have that familiarity there. So, yeah, he's only going to get better as well with that sort of thing. He's gonna start developing different sorts of passes into different sorts of players playing on that side as well, whether it's clipped passes, whether it's drilled passes and that sort of thing. So he's already, you know, getting relationships down. So I'm pleased, man.
Yeah, I'm going to send you a comp of Mosquera's game that I watched before we started recording this. And when you watch it, you'll be really surprised at what you see. Because you talked about like him developing the variety of passes, and I'm like, he has a lot of passes already. There's a lot of clubs in that bag already. Like, I was very impressed. Like, because watching the game, it wasn't quite obvious to me how involved he was in the buildup. Because in my head, I was like, Gabriel is going to handle this. But he was really involved, and he was doing what we call cutting shapes. He was cutting shapes on the grass. Like, I did not expect that. I thought his whole, you know, he had two weaknesses, according to the people who scouted him a little more extensively than us. One, he's not that great in the air. Two, he's not that great on the ball. And between Anfield and today, I'm like, either he got a lot better over the holidays. Don't do that, coach. Either he got a lot better over the holidays or whatever, or, you know, I mean, either way, we owe Valencia money, and I just don't want to get involved, you know. But, you know, I know if they call me to testify, I will testify on Valencia's behalf, even though they're a bunch of racists that abuse Vinicius. But it's fine. Mosquera was involved. It's okay.
Do you want to just have a quick glance over his stats quickly, just especially please, from on the ball stuff? So 92% pass completion, 76 of those he completed, right? Like 76 passes. That is great. One long ball he attempted didn't come off, but 93 touches of the ball. He was clearly like our chief distributor. Like, that is, I'm so happy for him. I'm so impressed, man. That's going to give him so much confidence, honestly. Like, the players trust him straight away. Like, you're replacing the, you know, arguably the best centre-back in the league. You know, some people think he is, some people think Gabriel is. I don't really care, we've got both. But, and you come in and you do that, please, man. Like, even just he's defending as well. Four clearances, no blocked shots. Because he had none to block, bro. Yeah, man, I'm really, really happy for him, man, seriously.
Yeah, he had a fantastic game. Another gem. Andrea Berta, you're changing lives over here. Mitch, should we be worried? 7 minutes in, Marino probably should score a chance. I think it's the aftermath of a set piece. It's been a while since the game. I can't remember. Marino should probably score. Based on his current form, I'd already raised my hands for goal. It didn't go in. But ball gets saved. In the aftermath of that, Odegaard gets, I don't know, lifted, as they say, and he lands on the shoulder again, and he immediately looks uncomfortable. Do you think we have a real problem here? I hear that the full-on recovery is like 2 to 4 weeks if you just don't do shit. You know, so are you concerned?
It's, I think, just truly like hysterical levels of unluckiness for like this same like action to happen twice, because it just truly doesn't happen very often where you're like getting swept your leg and falling on your shoulder in the exact same way, and it's happened twice in the last 3 games. So like at this point we should probably, and like I will say that Wanyeri has played well enough where it's like I think we should feel comfortable enough like letting Odegaard like fully get healthy and be able to not it, like if a thing like this happens again, he's not having to be subbed out in the first half. But I think it's just truly a level of unluckiness for this just like, if it happens on the other shoulder, he's probably fine. But because it's the right same one that he hurt the other day, like, that's the issue. And it's just like, I feel so bad for him because, like, it's so hard to, like, regain your form when you keep getting hurt in such a strange way. Because it's not even like a leg injury or like a muscle injury. It's just he's gotten wiped out twice in 3 games and landed on the same shoulder twice. Like, that's just such an unlucky scenario.
I would describe it as a core injury because, you know, motherfucker needs to stop falling over. How about that? You know, stand on your feet, Martin. Okay. Mm-hmm. But get well soon. Get well soon. Coach, if you're thinking about the various ways, like Mitch mentioned earlier, there are a bunch of permutations that the coach can put out now based on the squad we have, despite the injuries. If you're ranking the permutations that he can put out to replace Odegaard's creativity or his role in the team, in any particular lineup? Like, how are you ranking them? Like, are you perhaps moving the creativity over to the left and moving Rice to the right? Are you just doing a straight up swap with Ethan? Are you playing Marino there? Because Mikel has shown a clear desire to do that on occasion, despite your opinion of Marino's creativity. How are you ranking these options?
I'm going to go for familiarity here and just say I think maybe Ethan might be number one. Because Ethan, again, today, I think was really good. We didn't really skip a beat. No disrespect to Odegaard, of course. I think it's more of a testament to what Ethan has done since last season and how far he's come along that he's really, really grown. And then after that, my next actual option would be to move Saka there and get our rocket on the our new rocket on the right hand side, just frying these man. That would be my next.
Wipe Yamal.
Which Yamal, sorry?
White man Yamal, you know, Max. Already?
No, Madueke.
Sorry. We're talking that for later so hard that I'm like, I'm not even thinking about him right now.
That'd be my next portal. Wanyeri, then Saka in that position with Madueke obviously flanking. And then if we have to play Marino there, then I'm probably changing a bit more of the composition of the team to fit him there, because I think he should probably play that role if he's going to just crash the box basically and just put more creators around him. So put Saka on the right for sure. Eze has to play maybe as the LC, I'm not saying as the as the LCM, maybe Rice at the base to accommodate for that. That's what I'd probably do if I'm going to put Marino in the RCM space.
All right. So Marino lasts again. We shall see. Ronaldo will prove you wrong in the end. He always does. How impressed were you, Mitch, by the fact that we got our first corner on the right side of the pitch and Nani pulled up to take that shit and it turned out great?
I was very, very happy with the fact that both of our corner takers were not on the pitch, and both Eze and Manueke did great jobs on their deliveries. I thought it was a little bit interesting in Anfield that we were still cooking with rice. I think I said like on the pod after the Liverpool game that like it was just maybe a little too soon for Manueke to like maybe he just like had not practiced them. And it seems like he's maybe practiced them and is now feeling good enough to be able to take these during our matches. And did a great, great job. I'm very, very happy because Rice is a great corner taker on the other side, but I did not like the shit that I was seeing at Anfield.
Outswingers are not for me. I'm not an outswinger guy. That's my soccer heritage now. No more outswingers. I never want to see them.
Pin the goalkeeper in his fucking six.
Always.
Pin him there.
Every time. Well, Coach, that leads us into an excellent segue because it's time to talk about Nani. I take my notes as the game goes on so we can talk on the podcast. And right here it says, it's 17 minutes in. So this is before Odegaard even goes off. I wrote, Nani is on corners and he's looking like Arsenal's best player again. That was 17 minutes in. Come to find out, by the time he goes off, I wasn't exaggerating. He might have been our best player today, even though somebody else scored a brace. Mitch, you're obviously going to come in on this after Coach does his bit. But can you just, I don't know, I think it's time to take the victory lap. Let's do it early. Fuck it. Let's do it early. We've achieved nothing, but let's do it now. Let's do it now, Coach.
Yeah, I hate you all. I think you're dickheads. I genuinely do, bottom of my heart. I think you're terrible, terrible people, and I think you're entitled, and I think you need to learn to just shut the fuck up, basically. And this fake, you know, idea that, yeah, I just want what's best for the team, and, you know, I'm just this, that, and that kind of thing. Shut up. Shut up. Like, shutting up is what's best for the team sometimes, believe it or not. Just shutting the fuck up really is. Because if you did shut the fuck up, you'd watch and you'd learn and you'd understand why that sort of signing was made, and you wouldn't talk about, oh, but why did he get in first? And not, but just shut up. It's not, we're not, like, the club's not here to appease your little whiny bullshit needs. They're not here to do that. I need to get that, people need to get that through their heads. They're not here to just appease every little thing that you moan about. They're gonna do things the way they want to do things, and whether you want to stick with them or not, that's up to you. But you're gonna shut up. You should just shut the fuck up, basically. Now I've got it off my chest. Noni Madueke. I think we had a talk about him. I want to say 2, maybe 3 years ago, when he was at PSV, and I went to watch Arsenal, but he was playing, and I was like, oh, I actually like what this guy's got, like, mad physical potential, he's got a long stride, and he caused a little bit of problems for the 15-20 minutes he was on or whatever. I think I was like, okay, cool, I like what I see here. And then Chelsea signed him, I was like, oh, fuck's sake, okay. So I just parked my expectations of him, because I was thinking, oh, they're gonna stamp his development, they don't really care. But then he showed some stuff in the 2 years that he was there, I was like, I knew straight away the environment wasn't right for him. Like, he's like, that Chelsea environment is not right for players that, like, Madueke at that stage of their development, because for a couple of reasons. But he needs reps. He's not one of those exquisite gifted youngsters that you'll just come on and just, like, you know, he looks like he's been playing forever, basically, you know, like your Miles and whatever else. He needs reps. And with Chelsea, it was just weird, like, the whole situation. So us signing him, I was like, oh, okay, this is a lot better, I think. Everyone is already here, settled. You're learning from Saka, you know, your competition for England. And you've got a coach who specializes with wide players as well. Sorry, Martin. But so I was like, yeah, this could be a good fit, you know, and he's not gonna come here thinking I'm gonna be the man. No, you've got others that can take that from you. But when you're called upon, you can express yourself. And that leads me onto today, because boy did he express himself. He expressed himself all over that. All over my man, whatever his name was. And the encouraging thing is, a lot of the time he was going on the outside, which I think is what, I wouldn't say what we missed, but it's another way of skinning the cat, you know, like going on the outside of your man, thinking across to the back post, or, you know, flashing it across goal, but all the while knowing that you can still come in on your right foot as well. It's just making yourself as unpredictable as possible, and you're doing it repeatedly, over and over and over and over again. That is the key thing here. Anyone can skin their man once or twice. He's done it like 7-8 times today. So yeah, I've rambled on enough, but that's my overall feeling on Noni Madueke as of today, you know.
Mitch, I know if this was a chicken bone, he basically took all the meat off that shit, pause all that, but if you got anything you want to add to that, go ahead, please.
Yeah, I do. I said before we recorded, I think that was like one of the most impressive attacking performances I've seen without a goal and an assist attached to it. Like, at every opportunity, he was doing something dangerous. He was doing something fun. Like, he is just a very, very fun player to watch. And I would like to second Coach's thing of, if you are one of those motherfuckers that signed a petition about not signing him, you are a fucking idiot. I would put money that a lot of those people that had that energy around Madueke didn't about number five. And, you know, I think that just says a lot about their worldview, that they care more about us not signing a player from Chelsea than us having someone like that on our team for as long as we did. I do want to mention James Benj asked Arteta about Madueke, and Arteta said that apparently it was brought up in these conversations with him before we signed him of like, hey, there's been this reaction to you. And he's just like, I don't care, I'll prove him wrong. And like, and Arteta apparently wanted to sign him even more. And I don't blame him. That's a mindset that you want out of a player like that. And I think he's, every single performance that he's had for Arsenal has been impressive. Anyone who thinks otherwise was not watching. I can't wait to see more from him. He is a very, very fun player.
Very well said, gentlemen. I mean, I'm just really happy for the kid. I didn't expect the start to be this good. And it's crazy because not as if he scored like a bunch of goals or something, you know, because that'd be the easy way to be like, well, he shut the critics up. But, you know, this is a triumph of the eye test. Like, if you watch the games, your only opinion can be this guy helps teams win, you know. And that is enough for me for now. Hopefully we can get that end product on a more consistent basis and all that. Coach, you want to come back in?
Yeah, I want to just hold you here a little bit quickly, pause. in regards to like Madueke's positioning and what we're doing, I suppose, with our pinning of the fullbacks, where do you think we can potentially go with him, especially being 6'1" or whatever? Like, I think there's potentially room for him to become like a back post goal for it, like in terms of just hoofing it up there, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things he shares in common with Bukayo is his strength, but he's actually bigger. And he has the same kind of like, I wouldn't call him just that stance that they take, that where they lower their body and you can't really move them until they've decided what they're doing with the ball. You know, like they both have it. And we basically use Saka like that. We play a lot of long balls out to him. So I imagine that we're going to be using Nani for the same purpose pretty quickly, especially since the center forward we're currently playing doesn't necessarily have those skills in abundance. So it's going to make a lot of sense just punt it to Nani at some point. Cannot wait, because long balls, chicks dig them. Anyway, guys, let's move on to the next one. I know we already talked to Eze a little bit, but he had a block shot after Gyökeres got the ball over to him. There was some good build-up on the right. The ball circulated over, and it happened on two occasions. And he was a little slow to pull the trigger. I don't have a problem with that. He pulled the trigger. I'm happy with that. But I do wonder, given Eze's larger skill set, is that the best use of him? Mitch, I'll let you take this one. Like, I almost feel as if attacks should originate on his side of the pitch and end on the other side instead of the other way around.
I mean, I think he makes us be able to be less than one-dimensional. He can be the place where we start an attack, but I also like the fact that he is someone that wants the ball when we are trying to finish an attack. I thought the one you were talking about in particular, Gyökeres did a really good job of like bringing the ball forward, drifting over to the left, and like that was a time in which Eze actually like had more support over on that side. I don't really have a problem with an attack ending with Eze. I think his final product is very, very good. And while it'd be great to have him starting an attack, I don't really have a problem with him being there at the end.
Coach, do you want to tackle that one? Because Mitch punted it. He's a coach.
To be honest, I think this is one of the things that me and my boy Al were talking about today when we're looking at both our wide men. And I was like, well, obviously, Madueke was getting a lot more of the ball than Nani. I think it's just muscle memory. We're going to be more on the right-hand side. Well, it's like, we could just throw it to Eze and he's going to make something happen anyway. It doesn't actually matter where the ball goes, like, when we're attacking at this point. And obviously, they both bring different qualities. But I think Madueke created enough havoc today and created enough openings, not particularly chances. I think he could have created maybe one or two. But he created enough openings for us to be confident enough that if it goes to that side, Eze can finish off the chance. But like I said before earlier, Eze's whole game is combining and creating shit. So to be honest, the ball going out to Eze, I would like to see more of it just because I want to be entertained. I'm a bit greedy here, but it's an option. This is what I'm saying. It's not even just an option, it's a viable option. It can actually be your plan A. There's nothing wrong with it being your plan A. Give the ball to Eze and let him make shit happen. There's nothing wrong with that. He won Palace at FA Cup doing that, basically. So I would like to see more of it, more for selfish reasons, but I don't have an issue if he's not getting the ball as much. There's another point I want to make, but I'll probably save it for a little bit later. But yeah, there's a reason why I don't mind it. So,
well, like Mitch said earlier, the guy on the other side of him was cooking anyway. So, you know, it's fine. But for me, I'm just looking at the skill sets. Like a player like Nani should be running onto shit and just smashing it in. A player like Eze should be the one unlocking the shit, but you know, it's an option. It's all options. But when it happened two times in quick succession, I was like, I don't know if I like this. You know, you start stroking your beard, like, how can we make this better? You know, but it's fine, people. I'm not complaining. It's just, you know, there, like, this is essentially a new team we're watching. Like, yeah. There's no Odegaard because he went off injured. There's no Saka, there's no Havertz, Martinelli not starting. There's a whole new bunch. So I'm over here like, everything can be better to me at this point in time. Like, everything can get better. So I'm just thinking about how do we improve this? Mitch?
This front three had never played together before as, like,
exactly.
A unit.
Exactly.
There was some teething at the beginning of this game, and I thought by the end, they, like, by the time Eze and Madueke were subbed out, or I guess Gyökeres came out first, but by the time Gyökeres came off, like, they were all, like, I think on the same page at that point. I think there was a lot of stuff in the first half where it's just like, ooh, that pass wasn't exactly where it needed to be. Like, they're still kind of learning where where their teammates want to be in certain times. And I think that'll only get better with time. The fact that we won 3-0 in a game where like they're still figuring that out is really impressive. One thing I will say about Nani, though, in that regard, he's maybe too unpredictable, maybe for his own teammates. I think there was a couple times where he even faked out his own teammates in like knowing when to crash the box and stuff like that, because he is so tricky of like, is he going to cut in? Is he going to run towards the byline? You're not exactly sure. The defender doesn't know, and his teammates don't exactly either, which is almost too much of a good thing.
Yeah, I think over time, they'll learn him. He'll streamline his game a bit, you know, because he can be over elaborate at times. You know, I think ultimately, I feel like players like him are best when they're just direct. Like, mm-hmm. I think I don't want them thinking a lot. When they start thinking, shit goes wrong. So just go for it. If you feel like shooting, shoot. If you think there's a cross there, cross it, you know.
And there was a couple times where I was like wanting him to do the Saka thing, where it's just like, no, go across the 18 onto your left, take a shot, hit a top corner.
Right.
And there was a couple times where he just would drag it more towards the byline, would stay on the ball longer, and would get the ball across, which is great and a great way to create chances. But I it's maybe a little bit of the muscle memory of like Saka's been our right wing for so long. This is what I'm used to. Even when Wanyeri was deputizing for him last season, that's what we saw. So 90% of the time in the last few years when we've seen someone playing the right wing for Arsenal, that's been the move of like taking it across the 18, firing it with your left. So the fact that he's able to add a different dimension and in a way that's different from Saka of when he's doing it is really, really fun and a different and like an extra thing that we're able to just throw in the pot of this attack.
Yeah, it's what makes the fact that he essentially, you know, because technically he accepted the assignment as Saka's backup. That's what he did when he agreed to sign with Arsenal. People may say, well, that shows a lack of ambition, you know. But when you think about it, they're different enough that if you substituted one for the other, it could be an attacking or a defensive substitution depending on what you're looking for in that moment. You know, so I love that there's enough of a distinction between them that they can play in different positions. They can play next to each other. Yeah, Mikel knows what the fuck he's doing, guys. Like, yeah, I mean, he doesn't have the shiny shit yet, or not enough of it, because we got some. But the guy knows what he's doing. You know, let's just move on, because I'm in such a great mood, guys. It's nice when Arsenal win. That Liverpool shit sucked. I hated it. I just want to reiterate, I hated that shit so much that we had to wait like 2 weeks and just sit with it. Oh my God, I was mad. I was losing so mad.
Losing before an international break is a horrible, horrible feeling. Weeks of sitting with just like anger in you.
it's awful. But real quick before we move on from Madueke, because I really just want to lean into the victory lap. He had the most crosses, 14. Most touches in Nottingham Forest's box, 12. Most duels won, 9. Most chances created, 5. Most successful take-ons, 4. Most tackles, 3. And the most fouls won, 2. He most everything, okay? So we're saying yes to Nani over on this spot, okay? So just deal with it. We declared it. It's over.
Yeah, and this is kind of what I wanted to like reiterate here. Now, I think Eze is obviously more gifted than Madueke, right? Madueke to me seems like an attritional player. He'll just keep going, keep going, keep going, keep going. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think most attackers should probably be like that. But the unique thing with Eze is Eze doesn't need a lot to kill you. And I think it's a wonderful balance to have one player on one side that will just keep getting at you until something shakes loose. Another player that will just, you leave him half a yard and you're dead, basically. That is a wonderful balance to have when you have it. And absolutely murder to play against. Like, it is horrible. And I think that is where we're kind of at. And I feel like it's kind of like the roles are reversed in a way with us. Whereas, you know, Saka would get a lot of the ball. Obviously, Martinelli would also get bits here and there, but Saka would get a lot of the ball and kill you pretty much every single time. Whereas Martinelli wouldn't get much. I wouldn't do much. And now it's like the roles have been reversed, not only on the sides of the pitch, but also the type of players that we have. You know, it's a wonderful, wonderful balance to have. Seriously, guys, we need to appreciate it.
Berta, you're changing lives. Changing lives, man. I love that little Italian bastard. I'd be at the Hermes shop every day this week, just in tribute, just to kiss the ground there. Like, God damn, I love that dude. All right, let's get to the fun part. As if we haven't had enough fun. It's 40 minutes in and we haven't discussed the first goal, guys.
I was going to mention that.
I know, it's wild. Nani took one of those really good corners. Nana first cleared out, and Zubimendi decides to inform everybody that, in case you forgot, my technique is immaculate. The shit was beautiful. Matt Sells, for the second year in a row, watched a ball damn near slap him in the face. I don't know. I want my goalkeepers to take balls in the face. Matt Sells, you're not like David Raya. I don't respect you. But Mitch, any surprise on what you saw there? Actually, you know what? Let me rephrase the question. Sorry, Mitch. When he was about to be signed, when he was joining and we're watching all those scouting videos, I'm sure you heard the statement, he has a lot more offensive capability in his game. There's more to unlock in his game. Is this what you think we're trying to unlock? Is it just straight up goals, or do you think there's a like more from a more open play context, really?
I think it was more from an open play context of like what he's able to do of like playing so high as a six, of just like bringing our line even higher and allowing for us to have even more control when we're in possession in the final third. But, you know, if he can unlock this part of his game, there's not much we can't do, you know? I don't know if you can have a finer technique on a shot like that. Volleys are fucking hard. And to get that kind of spin outward, because I kept hearing that it deflected off a head, and I don't think it did. I think it just has that beautiful curve. And he nearly does it again a couple minutes later. He just, like, he's got this eye for that kind of ball, and it's truly an impressive goal. Great way to start the game, and chalk it up to set piece FC, right?
Yeah. I was going to ask, because I'm not sure about this. If the other team has cleared the ball, does that become if it's the second phase of a set piece, is it still the set piece? Is it a set piece?
Don't know. No. Don't care.
It doesn't count. Funny enough, it doesn't actually count, I think, on the actual official record. No. But for people that want to nitpick and be like, oh, we still can't create, then we're like, oh, you know, I don't give a fuck personally. You know what I mean? You got to get it how you can. We open up the game and then scored, you know, two more open play goals. So it is what it is. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to move us ahead to the second half, because the goal happened at the end of the first half. Well, towards the end of the first half. Actually, not really towards the end. Sorry, people, I'm lying. It was the 32nd minute. That's not towards the end at all. But essentially, we just held Nottingham Forest at bay. Eventually, we decided to drop our line a bit and see the half out. That was pretty comfortable, besides the moment where Elliot Anderson and Morgan Gibbs-White kind of combined a little bit. Urien Timber cleaned it up. The shot went way wide. That's the closest they came to Trubner Raya, I think. Well, not for the entire game, because something happened in the second half. We'll get to that in a second. But over the second half, first minute of it, Calafiori floats a ball over their young Italian fullback that came on the first half of Murillo. And his position was bad there, and he wasn't keeping the offside line. But that's not our problem, because Eze ran in behind him. First time assist to Yocarez, 2-0 to the Arsenal. Coach, I'll let you start on this goal. When we were seeing them pick up all these transfers during the summer, You saw this vision, didn't you?
So here's the thing, right? Where we have so much variety in attack, which is what we wanted. But one of the easiest looking goals to score is having a tricky wide man put it on a sixpence for a non-compromising number nine to just stick it in the back of the net. And it's one of the most pleasing goals to me, because it just tells you your attack is good. Your wide man providing for your number nine. It's a tell all this time. That's what it is. And while teams know, okay, your wide man's going to provide, the nine's going to score, most weeks they do stop it. But when you can't stop it, that means your attack has done its job. Simple as. And I want to see more of it. It's that simple. Wide men providing for a big, bulky, Paul's number nine to put in the back of the net. It's that simple. That's all it has to be. And the only thing I say that differed from my initial vision was I didn't think we'd be that direct to Eze. If that sort of goal could be scored, I thought it'd be more likely to go to Madueke. Do you know what I mean? Because he's the runner of the two. But the fact that it was Eze just lets us know that, oh shit, we've got more in this bag. You know, Eze can do that shit as well. And I noticed both of them, they made a lot of, you know, fake moves to fake out their fullback before they made a move initially. And the one time that I think Eze, you know, really got it to come off, we scored from it. But yeah, it's that simple for me. Wide men that can beat their man and put it on the 6-yard box. It's that simple.
I'm just happy for Yocarez. I mean, this is, to my mind, this is the reason why we got him. He might not. For me, Kai Havertz is a big game striker. You know, still, like, no matter what Gyökeres does in a big game, I'm gonna want to give Havertz at least an hour. You know, that's just how I feel about it. I feel like he just offers. He's just so uncomfortable for defenders. He's so tactically brilliant. You can try so many things with him in the game without having to move too much around, because you can just move him around. But in a game against a team like Nottingham Forest on a Saturday afternoon in September, like, kill this game for me, Victor. You know, pretty shortly after that, there was a chance. I guess we can call it a chance for Nottingham Forest, but essentially Dan Ndoye ran Calafiori, I believe, crosses the ball. It ricochets off Chris Wood's chest, I think. It did not look intentional at all. Lobs Raya, hits the bar. Then Timber and Mosquera decide to, you know, crack a joke. I laughed. It was funny. Ha ha. But eventually they cleared it. Mitch, how terrified were you that we're about to concede yet another Arsenal classic, I'd call that.
Yeah, that would have just been, because it was, they had nothing the entire game. It would have been completely against the run of play. So it would have been very Arsenal to concede something like that, of like a goal that Chris Wood truly did not realize that he was going to score. Thankfully our defenders cleaned it up. But you know, it's a close one. We don't love that.
Yeah, we don't love that at all. The little mix up at the end there between the defenders. What would you, I mean, shit can happen. It's football, but we're going to blame that on newness, right? Like, these guys just met each other, correct? Like, that can't be by, like, week six.
In the same way that the attack is kind of getting used to each other, I think the defense is getting used to each other a little bit. As good as Mosquera is, he is still 21. Timber, we forget, is still a pretty young player as well. I think sometimes you just have those kind of miscommunication errors, and luckily it didn't amount to anything.
Yeah, I'm not going to linger on this, guys, but my initial thought for a player of the match was actually Timber. Can't explain it, but he was the one that stood out to me in this game as my favorite player of the game. Thought he was great, but we're not going to linger on it. Let's move on. Here's when I found out that Chris Wood was playing. He got substituted on the hour mark. That's when I was like, oh, shit, my whole, like, Mosquera got to pass the Wood test. That was a dud. That was not a test at all. You know, we're going to need a different test. There was some nice interplay around that period of the game down the left that led to Marino setting up Ethan for a nice shot. I thought that was pretty good evidence that just switching a couple personnel around, which I guess is not an easy thing to do because these were expensive players, let's be honest. But flopping, switching in some talent, putting some different talent in there. And the left side starts looking. Actually, you know what? While we're here, let's just briefly talk about the left side generally, because we've complimented players who comprise of the left side. We talked about Calafiori already, or Mitch did specifically. We've done Eze. Marino was the left eight today. And I think enough good things happened that you would have to say, if we got this level of output from the left in every game, we'd say our left side works, correct?
Yeah, I just want to, you know what? I think the left side today benefited from what midfield played today as well in general. I think our midfield in general was really good, but it's more about what we have, especially in our first 4 to 5 midfielders. All of them, I feel, can play in the first phase competently, no problem. They can all also play in the second phase competently, no problem. Now, in the third phase, we obviously have more specialists there, but they all have qualities that they can affect in the third phase every game, no problem. And that helps when you're trying to feed the ball to both sides of the pitch, absolutely, because you're not really worried about, oh shit, if I give it to him on this side, kind of thing, can we still progress down this side? We saw, obviously, Madueke getting the ball a lot, kind of thing, but it didn't stop us giving the ball to Eze. It didn't. We just, obviously, again, muscle memory. And I think it's a compliment to our recruitment, but also to just the talent of the players that we have now, that all of our midfielders, while they have their designated position, Ruben Mendy has played the six, let's not mistake that, you know, Odegaard is clearly our most attacking midfielder, but they all contribute in all phases at any time. You know, I saw Ruben Mendy really, really high today. I saw him really high against United as well at times. They all do it together. So when that happens, it automatically, I feel like it will liberate the attack, you know, on both sides. But on our left side today, yeah, sure. I will be honest and say that I think Calafiori had a lot to do with that, despite him not spending that much time on that side. But I think we'll probably get onto that a little bit later. But yeah, I think it's our left side benefited today just how interchangeable our midfield is.
Said coach, well said. You mentioned Calafiori at the end there. Mitch, on I think 64th minute, he fouled somebody and got a yellow. Is this something we kind of have to get used to? He's a foully player, isn't he?
I thought it was kind of a soft yellow, but he has the energy of someone that doesn't know how to control their body, even though we know he definitely does. He just has a lot of chaos energy to him, and I think that's just going to result in some yellows here and there, because he like has the kind of body control at times that make it look like it's a dangerous tackle when it not necessarily is. And I mean, you can kind of, they were saying the same thing on the broadcast against Liverpool about Zubimendi. I think it's all game state. Sometimes they get in behind and you want to pull them down as a tactical foul. And, then you get labeled as fouly cause you play for Arsenal. So, it happens.
Well, I'm doing the labeling here, so easy on me.
You know what I mean? Well, I mean, the famous Arsenal hater Lee Dixon was calling Zubimendi foully during the Liverpool game, and I'm just going to be thinking about that all the time because now it's going to be a thing that just is permeated.
He's Lee Dixon. Well, what can you expect? All right. MLS came on. Not a whole lot to discuss there. Nice to see him regardless. Rice came on for Yacarez. Almost scored with his first touch, I feel like. Really good interplay down the right. Cross came across goal. Just didn't get there. Who played the cross? I forget. Anyone remember? Was it Nani still?
I think it was Timber that played the cross, no?
It was Timber, you're correct.
It was Timber, yeah. Again, from it's another
your man of the match, Dean.
A key part, should I say, from Madueke, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it was a really nice setup. Madueke has kind of, well, in this game at least, he sort of, I didn't call it unlocked because I'm sure he's been capable of this for years, but that or he really knows how to feed the overlap.
Put
the right weight on the ball because Yacarez had the shot from that and this cross also resulted from a similar play.
Do you want to know why that is though? And I feel like you probably do, but when you've got the beating of your man and you're, like Mitch mentioned before as well, the unpredictability, you gain that extra respect, you gain that half yard, so you can make the decision to either feed overlap or try to make something else happen instead. And you only get that, number one, if you're good and if you've got the fear of God into these guys as well. So let's keep it up, guys.
It's pretty exciting stuff. And I mean, the hope is that it's going to get better. They just started. Let's see. Oh, the final goal. We scored another one in the 79th minute. A free kick routine. Saw Rice pass to Trossard and he curled a really delicate cross that was met by a dominant header from the very midgety Martin Zubimendi. Because for some weird reason, I don't know, they treat him like it's a dating app or something. Because apparently 5'11 is short as hell, people. Because the way they were talking about him was like a make-a-wish kid. So oh my God, Martin Zubimendi heads the ball. It's like, bro, he's an adult. He won 70% of his headed duels in La Liga last season. Like, he does this, people. Like, y'all should not be surprised by this.
They're
at
acting
all.
Like he was Torreira. It was something else.
Why is that? Is it his face or something? Like, he just looks very pleasant.
I think he has little guy energy. Yeah, I think that's what it is.
His demeanor just seems a little bit unassuming, is the word I'd use.
He absolutely has like happy little guy energy, and I think that's why, even though he is 5'11.
Yeah, I feel like this is what Cucurella would be if he actually cut that bullshit ass hair. I think that they might have the same.
Hey, respect Zubimendi. Come on.
He's a good player. He's annoying as shit, but he's a good player, you know. So anyway, that was fantastic to see. And again, I sort of expected this from Zubimendi based on what we'd heard about him prior to him showing up, but it's still nice to see it happen. And in the same game, I'm a bit like, bro, you probably could have spaced these out, like maybe save one for a crucial moment, but maybe he's just trying to score a lot more goals. Maybe that's just the whole thing. I'm okay with that. Guys, actually, let me start with coach here. Would you say at least periods of this game were Arsenal's best of the season thus far?
Yeah, do you know what? It's weird. This game gave me a lot more. Well, it's because Nottingham Forest are a better side, I suppose. But I was a little bit nervous about this game initially. But I think this has been more encouraging than what I saw from the two home games, this has been more encouraging than what I saw against Leeds, to be honest. I feel like there was, despite a lot of the stuff we had going into this game of, you know, players being injured, you know, lots of literally a whole new front three, and then essentially a front four when Ranieri came on, I was a bit worried, but there was a lot of connectivity there as well with the team, a lot of togetherness, which is good. So I'm encouraged, to be honest, because if we played today and it was maybe against a better side, potentially there could have been struggles there. I see us potentially struggling, but we found a gear today that, you know, we were comfortable, really, really comfortable. So yeah,
Pib, it was really, really comfortable. Correct. Mitch, do you want to hazard a guess at what our lineup for Bilbao will be on Tuesday?
Yes.
Pib saying no, you cannot.
No, he was just trying to do a cat thing and step on my keyboard, you know? And I got to prevent him from doing that because he doesn't know what that does. Let me guess what our lineup for Bilbao will be. I'm going to go with Raya, Timber. I think I'm going to go with Mosquera again because I think Saliba will be back in the squad by Bilbao, but I don't know if he'll be starting again. And I think Mosquera is playing well enough where we don't need to rush him back. Gabriel, Calafiori, Zubimendi, Rice, Wanyeri, Menueke, Gyökeres, Eze.
Coach, I hope you are listening to that because I'm asking you, what do you think about it? And do you think we're really going to go back to San Sebastian and not start Mikel Merino?
I was just going to say, I actually don't see us going there without our trusty Spanish Swiss Army knife. I think, again, away in the Champions League, I have zero issues with us being conservative unless you're playing PSV because they're shit. But I have no issue with us. I don't even know. Let me take my words back. I don't want to say conservative. Being respecting the opposition. It's the Champions League. It's Champions League opposition. So you have to give them their respect. I'm just really annoyed that we just don't have near enough a full complement, because this would potentially be a game where I would have liked to have experimented a little bit with what I'd call our strongest 14 to 15 players, potentially a game where even if we didn't start Merino, we could potentially start Havertz and Gyökeres together. I just want to see it. So I'm a little bit annoyed about that, but I suppose we can replicate that, some of that, with Merino there, I suppose. But yeah, I think this today was pretty close to what we'd see on Tuesday in general. I think I don't want to see Odegaard, to be honest. So yeah, start Merino, I'd say, with Rice and Zubimendi, I'd say.
You guys are cowards. I would start Max Dalman at center back. I'm crazy. All right, people. I think we've had a very joyous episode, even though I'm feeling kind of cold now. We've had a very joyous episode because it's just nice to talk about a game where there's just positives. No, oh, crap. No, I just remember that Odegaard did get hurt. I was about to say no one got hurt, but he got hurt. Because apparently that's what he's going to do in every home game moving forward.
Can I mention one thing before we get out of here?
Please.
We touched on Gyökeres' goal, obviously. Great that he scored. He also had a fucking rocket hit the post.
You mentioned and, that.
And he has 3 goals now in 4 games in the Premier League. He is a third of the way towards what our highest scorer in the league was last year. I think a lot of people have their issues with how Gyökeres plays. This motherfucker scores goals. Like, he's going to be in a golden boot race, which is kind of what you need to win a title. And I'm very, very excited about that.
I was going to say, I think he scored from his first shot in general in the game. If I remember correctly, he had one blocked shot, I think, maybe in the first half. He came in from the left. I wouldn't even count that. I literally think he scored from his first shot in general in the game, which is wonderful. Absolutely. I think I said it on the instant reaction, but when you're still engaged like that, that is terrifying for defenders. That he could just be walking around, you know, what's that Russell Westbrook meme? He'd just be running around, he'd be tricking y'all at. That's essentially what he's doing, and then he pops up with a goal that essentially kills the game. That's terrifying for defenders. Genuinely, he's a shock.
Yeah, the big physicality thing people talked about a lot when he was getting signed was how he could repeat his sprints throughout the game, and he like the gap between him and the next guy in all the leagues he's played in for the last 4 seasons is like huge. Like he runs so much more than anybody else. So it means that he's basically running until the whistle blows. You know, he's not giving you a break. And when you have a guy like that out there, there's always a chance. There's always a chance. And that's all you want, really, you know. But Team Kai. it's not to support people with their teammates, please. Don't get into all that shit. But in any event, Mitch, thank you for your time as always. Coach, always good to see you. You know what to tell the people.
Like, share, subscribe, and peace. I take my shirt off. Work all day, hustle and pray. Got nowhere to go. Got to catch my shirt. My plantation shoe. My plantation shoe. My plantation shoe. Ah, plantation.